Welcome back to the Earl Abrams Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is here, and it's always good to have Sandy here. And Sandy, let's talk about the war, man. How can you not? Are we coming any closer to the end of this?
Well, you know, it's awfully hard to know. I mean, the world doesn't know. People, Reuters and people who really keep close tabs on it, can't figure out exactly. And apparently today there's Zoom meetings going on between Ukraine and Russia. And that's a hopeful sign. I mean, as long as they're talking, I suspect there's some urgency in this talking on both sides, because both sides face downside consequences from the continuation of this. And the question is, how does it get stitched together? When this first started, and I was on the show with you, I pointed out I thought that one of the sticking points would be what kind of security will Russia agree to the neutrality of Ukraine, in terms of how will Ukraine have itself territorially and geopolitically protected from something like what has happened with Russia now, based on the peace terms. And no, that'll be complicated. You know, the guarantees that are being talked about flow from Israel and a number of other European countries. And the question is, how does that get agreed to? I think the terms of the settlement were obvious at the beginning and are pretty obvious now, which is no NATO for Ukraine, and Crimea is acknowledged as being Russian after the 2014 annexation. And that there is a neutral Ukraine, and that the government of Ukraine is not required to change. I think there's going to be some sticking points about what happens in this eastern area, the Donbas, Luhansk, and Donetsk. But it sounds like they're even talking about settlement there. I think it will settle. I don't know how quickly. It is possibly true that Russia's talk about having serious negotiations was just designed to give them time to make troop movements in Ukraine, so they could focus their guns simply on the east and the Donbas and have a decisive military superiority there, which would allow them to basically claim all of Donbas.
Well, you know, Zelensky is now more willing. You're kind of the adrenaline, if you will, that he and others in Ukraine were feeling early on.
Yeah.
That's wavering now.
Well, of course. I mean, as it's always been said, war is truly hell, and the longer it lasts, the more the reality of the horribleness of it sinks in, and the horribleness of the damage that is done. Mariupol, this port city on the Black Sea, has apparently been leveled, and you know that has a terribly debilitating effect on a nation and a people. And if that's going to happen elsewhere, and if Russia is really willing to absorb the national opprobrium, the feeling in the world, in the international opprobrium, and we're willing to do that to another city, I mean, I think that's possibly what Putin is kind of waving as his sword, is like, yeah, you want to keep fighting because we can do that to another city as well. I think it was strategic, Mariupol. I think that it's very clear that what Russia wants to accomplish is a land bridge that runs from Russian territory to Crimea along the Black Sea, and Mariupol is the main city on that corridor. And so I think that they were willing to exercise that kind of military superiority, because I think they're intent on being able to claim that land. Okay, that's a lot of kind of observation. I do think it will settle. It's not altogether clear how quickly, but hopefully it'll settle in a way that will also contain the world's fear of Putin, and will contain Putin in terms of what is perceived to be his intent with respect to the rest of the old USSR, so that the Baltic nations, Finland, there are all these places that have put themselves on ready alert, sort of in fear of being the next Ukraine. And I'm not sure that that's a valid concern, but of course they're much closer to it than I am.
Well, you know, Zelensky, as I was saying before, as he's ready to see this stuff come to an end, but Putin is. He's angry because, again, he's lost so much and been embarrassed by this. He's a proud man, and you know, people can read into that whatever they want to read into that. But
I think people behave publicly. I think Zelensky is behaving publicly in a way to communicate with Russia and Putin and the Russian people. He's got a big audience in the Russian people, and to the extent that what he says can be conveyed to the Russian people, as I was saying on an earlier show, Zelensky was a TV star in a sitcom series that ran in Russia, and he was a star in Russian TV. So he's got a persona in Russia that people listen to. I think he's speaking to the Russian people and talking about how he's ready for peace to sort of take some of the starch out of Putin's backing in his country about what he needs to do to accomplish his objectives. Meanwhile, Zelensky and Ukraine they're pretty crafty militarily. They're moving and attacking. They're taking the offensive against Russian troops. So they're putting the heat on Russia. And so my sense of it is that we've got two crafty countries. Ukraine is actually a big European country. By European scales, it would be third or fourth biggest in Europe by population. And it's, I think, the biggest landmass other than Russia with European territory. So it's not a dwarf. It's not something that was going to be necessary.
Yeah, but militarily, it compared.
Oh, yeah, compared to Russia militarily. But, of course, unless you're willing to just create Mariupols all over the country, and if your intent is to subjugate a country and have a peaceful outcome, then you can't create Mariupols all over, because you end up with a populace that's extremely hostile and difficult to deal with, and a world that also has reactions. So if what your intent is, if you're Russia, is to move into Ukraine and have a regime change, that's a difficult process that requires you to essentially prevail quickly, which was, I think, everyone's view that Putin thought he could prevail quickly and the regime would topple and the people would just simply elect a Russian-leaning government. If that isn't going to be the case, and if they aren't going to decimate cities, they're going to have to fight on the land, on the ground. And it's very hard to fight a country on the ground, particularly if the people are against you. They know the street
where
crossings.
Right.
They know where to go. It's their country.
So the other part of this, Sandy, is you're talking 1 to 2 generations to rebuild that. I mean, you know, where the resources, and they can come from around the globe, but, you know, you got to tear down everything that's already destroyed and build all those things over again. That's got to be a generation or more.
Well, maybe. I mean, we can look at Dresden. You know, in Europe, between the United States and Britain and the bombings in Germany, we destroyed quite a few places. Germany destroyed some places as well. They all got rebuilt pretty quickly. Part of the discussion is...
Yeah, but we rebuilt.
Yes, and part of the discussions here is Ukraine is demanding that Russia provide some of the rebuilding. Russia might be willing to do that because it'll be Russian investment probably
right.
that goes into it, and it will help create a more Russian presence in Ukraine, and maybe Ukraine would be sensitive about that. European countries are also lining up to do the same thing, and part of the settlement will be, I think, that Ukraine will be free to join the EU. If they join the EU, there will be lots of European investment in Ukraine.
So I don't know if that's part of it, or whether or not Putin is going to accept that, Sandy. I don't know. That might be one of the things that you know, Putin doesn't want to see. I'm sure he doesn't want to see that. So, you know, that'll be something, might be a...
Doesn't want to see the EU?
Yeah.
Well, except
join the EU.
I think that there were some, not Putin himself, but some spokesmen for Putin that have suggested that they want to promise no NATO, but they're open to letting them join the EU, which I think belies some of what the U.S. has been saying about why Russia did this, because part of the Western expression of dismay about what Russia did was that Russia was doing this to squash the potential economic success of a more democratic neighbor, which of course also assumed that Ukraine was more democratic than Russia, and maybe it is now, but I don't think it was 20 years ago. you know, if they're willing to let them join the EU, then that belies that a little bit. And apparently the Russian spokesmen have suggested they are.
You know, Sandy, we're going to be going to a break in a couple minutes. And when we come back, I want to ask you about the fact that in this country, we are telling China that, you know, they shouldn't get involved in trying to help Russia. How do you make public statements like that?
Well, I think,
government.
Well, I think you also said before we started the show something about statements people are making about how we should stop, we should increase tariffs and stop trading with countries run by dictators.
Right, right. Yeah.
And that's an interesting process of American judgment about how other countries run themselves. I mean, I think we definitely do have an interest and should have an interest in human rights. But the fact that someone has a dictator doesn't necessarily mean that human rights are being seriously invaded. And furthermore, are we then going to break off trades with Saudi Arabia? Because Saudi Arabia doesn't have a dictator, has a royal family, which is even more embedded than a dictator, and it's not a very nice place in terms of how they deal with their people. They have beheadings. They beheaded hundreds of people this year.
But they've got some of the best crude oil.
I know they got.
We've got to go to a break. They've got sweet crude oil.
Sweet crude.
Yeah.
I have a glass of that after dinner every night.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.